would like to open with the following statement. That I have, for the past 3.5 years, been conducting a sexual relationship with Melanie Loewenberg, who came here to KCRW from the University of Southern California and, impressed by my radio work, offered, well, I'm sure you know. Now, although I am 33 years older than she, we saw in each other complementary soulmates and were immediately drawn to each other. Our relationship began with simple oral sex, evolved into long afternoon walks, and finally, arguments over coffee. I acknowledge that I lied to my friends, my colleagues, to Inspector Brown, and his assistant Tony Mancuso, and to his wife Arlene, with whom I spent many a summer in Palm Springs, and just last year attended the circumcision of their daughter, Melissa. But most disturbing to me is the fact that I lied to my girlfriend, my lovely, patient, long-suffering girlfriend, Dolores, who has stood by me through 14 years of investigations, special prosecutors, grand juries, indictments, the imprisonment of my friends and business associates, and that arrest at the Young Adonis bathhouse in Pico Beach. But let me say that without lies, the truth would be a hollow vessel. The truth would have no context in which to be appreciated. And so, yes, I lied. In order to make forever the truth shine like a great castle on a hill, like a great citadel in which we all can take refuge. Now, as we all know, the FBI found on Melanie's dress a stain with my DNA. And what is DNA? But merely a set of instructions for the manufacturing of proteins, for the building blocks of life. And did the FBI say that? Did the general counsel even mention it? And I can think of no greater gift that one human being can bestow upon another than the gift of life. And for this gift to be analyzed at a government laboratory at taxpayers' expense seems to be a travesty of the moment that produced it. In any event, as a result of my inappropriate and frankly embarrassing lapses, I have sought the advice and counsel of spiritual leaders. I have invited to KCRW for breakfast prayer meetings representatives of all our great faiths, Protestant ministers, Catholic priests, Hasidic rabbis, Buddhist monks, Southern Baptists, Northern Country Lutherans and Unitarians, Jehovah's Witnesses, Quakers, Taoists, Shinto priests, and practitioners of New World and New Age religions. And if I have left anybody out, please do not be offended. There's an 800 number on the lower third of your radio dial. Just call and register your religious affiliation with us, and we'll arrange to have you represented at the next ecumenical breakfast. Now, I'm sure you all know by now that Dolores is running for mayor of Santa Monica. So let's give her a chance to shine, to prove what she can do for us, not by way of redeeming me, but by way of serving you, the people of this wonderful city. She's a woman who has suffered much and has been the subject of much ridicule. We all need her, and I hope you will all turn out in large numbers and vote for her. And so, in conclusion, I want to recall some of the finest days of our post-revolutionary times when, on that hot July summer of 1789, in Philadelphia, the founding fathers, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and Benjamin Franklin, sweating in their high-button suits and thick leather garments, stood poised on the threshold of our nation's birth, midwives to democracy, and framed the Constitution. And when I say framed the Constitution, I don't mean that they measured it and cropped it and matted it and used non-reflective glass and selected the wood and had it stained. Nor, when I say they framed the Constitution, do I mean to imply that with false allegations they caused charges to be brought erroneously against it. What I mean to say is that they crafted it, they fashioned it, for a country of fewer than 2 million people residing along the Great Eastern Seaboard, eyes turned westward.
Do you believe that people who don't believe actually do believe?
Yes, I do. That's whether they believe it or not, too. They want to believe he exists even more than you and I.
So what you're saying is that the people who claim that they have no religious feeling really do have that feeling?
Yes, because also that is in and of itself is a religious feeling.
has your faith ever been tested? I mean, was there ever a time when you struggled with your own faith?
Oh, goodness, there were so many times. One time...
Joe?
Larry.
Oh, man, I haven't talked to you in a while, but I've been thinking about you a lot. It's more of a, not so much you, but California. When I think of California, I think of you because I've been having this amazing, these thoughts. I've been doing a play, you know, so I'm on stage in the middle of this play, and I'm, soon or tomorrow? When, okay, all right.
And, Mr. Franks, let me tell you something. I was angry. I was very angry. I dropped to my knees, and I shook my hands up to the heavens, and I pleaded with God. God, why have you repudiated me? This is a repudiation of myself and what I believe is important. God, why would you do this to me? I have served you. I have praised you. I have gotten others to praise you. And then I got an answer.
You got an answer?
So clearly.
And what was that answer?
Well, that's what I'm in the middle of telling you.
I'm sorry.
You do this quite often. You interrupt me when I'm in the process of answering the question. You're interrupting me, but when you tell me.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I'll try to hold back.
Okay. So I'm on my knees, and I'm saying, I have served you. I've made my life on this planet, in this body, all about serving you. And then I got an answer.
And what was that answer?
Now, what did... I was about to tell you.
I'm sorry.
Okay, then I got an answer. Okay? And do you know what that answer was?
No, I don't. What was it?
Well, I'm about to tell you. I mean, that answer, Mr. Franks, was God saying, Samson, this is your time to walk amongst the pained, to walk amongst the cumbered, to walk amongst the unhealed, and to know their pain, to understand so as better to preach my word. You must walk amongst the people who are not perfect, which is all of us. And I got up and I wiped the tears from me. And I said, thank you, God. I love you so much, God. And I love the love that you give me.
I was watching a documentary on Discovery about an hour ago about these people. The women were all bare-breasted. And you know these kind of documentaries where they're eating grubs and preparing for a feast, you know? And I realized how awful these people are. I mean, they have these weird rituals, and I don't understand why anybody would want to go and study them. I mean, they have these weird rituals and their belief systems, you know, that the universe began when the god of the tree farted out the god of the flower. I mean, they have these bizarre rituals and that are supposed to be quaint and interesting. I don't understand that. I was shocked to read in the paper last year about this anthropological investigation of the Mayans or the Aztecs or something, in which they discovered a certain ritualistic sacrifice of young girls, you know. And I thought, who could care about a society that sacrificed young girls? What value? Why should any university spend one penny to do research about a society like this? And this tribe I was watching in the documentary an hour ago, I mean, they were getting ready for the feast. They were going to eat some pigs and some grubs, you know. They obviously are barbaric. They are mean-spirited. They're cold. I can't imagine what they're their mating rituals are like. They're probably like baboons, you know. In the baboon culture, if a male baboon wants to have sex with a female baboon, and another male baboon, you know, wants to have sex with that female, sometimes they'll kill the female to spite each other. I'm saying they can't kill each other. They don't want to fight each other, but to hurt the other guy's feelings, they'll kill the female. That's true. It's a weird thing in baboons.
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
I just hadn't heard from you for a bit, so I thought maybe we could hook up or something like that and see what's been up with you.
I'll be here for a bit, so give me a call.
Think about Friday anyway, so call me back. Think about Friday. I'll talk to you later.
I'll probably be out for maybe... I just got to go to the bank and stuff like that and take care of that before it closes. But call me back after, what, 4 or something like that? Is that all right?
All right. No big deal, Kyle.
You all right? Hey, you watching the news? There's a fire in the Hollywood Hills. Anyway, okay. All right, then you want me to call you? No, all right, obviously not. So, but you're going to call me?
Well, no, what I'm calling you for is to see if we can't hook up or something like that. I mean, Philip was a little... Anyway, we were hoping you were going to come over to the opening. Just, can you hold the line 1 sec, please? Sorry. Wow, man. My phone's ringing off the hook now, too. So anyway, is it going to work for you this week? Joe? Hold on 1 sec, I gotta blow my nose. I don't wanna blow it into the phone, okay? Oh, jeez. Hello, Joe. How are you doing?
Hey, what are you doing there, big guy? Just hanging around the house this afternoon? Oh, gee, this isn't... Who's Royal, big guy? Is that a friend of yours?
Parker, you got another fish on the line? Yeah, I just want to tell you, just cast that out there and bring in a big one.
Hello, good afternoon. This is the phone company calling. We were wondering if you haven't been on the line all day talking to people. Hello, Mr. Frank. How are you today? I just want to ask you if you'd like to take me to the new movie everyone talking about. Maybe after the movie, we can go dancing, or perhaps we'd like to have breakfast like you used to do with your friend Royal.
Anyway, you're busy, so I'll be waiting for your call.
Okay, bye.
Suffering on this earth is not distributed according to how good people are or how bad people are. We often see bad people who do quite well in their lives and, people who are selfish and unkind to others who prosper and who do very well, and people who are decent and loving and kind who sometimes suffer horrible illnesses and reversals in business and live in poverty. If God is a just God and a good God, then why is life so unfair?
Well, that's why you have heaven and hell. I mean, you just answered your own question with my answer. And you don't go to heaven and punch in with a time card. You don't go, okay, I'm in heaven for a 2-week vacation. You're in heaven for eternity. This is fleeting, Mr. Franks. You know, you walk out your door and you go, oh, boo-hoo for me. You know, I didn't get my bagel this morning or something like that that upset you. If you are a good man, you will go and get your reward in heaven. If you are a bad man, you go to hell.
Is that bagel reference another put-down of the Jewish, the fact that I'm Jewish?
Would you stop with that? It is not a put-down. Do Jews eat bagels?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do. So then I thought maybe you had a bagel. What? How is that an offensive remark? Read your Bible. And I know you people have a Bible because we use it too. Okay?
You people.
It's in there.
You people. What if I called your people, you people?
What's that supposed to mean?
Well, what did you mean when you said you people have a Bible?
Jews have a Bible. I'm sorry, is that... Did I make a lie or an aspersion? Was I casting aspersions when I said Jewish people have a Bible? Because if I did, then any time I say a true fact, then that makes me, you know, mean and bigoted. Is that what you're trying to say to me?
It's true that we have a Bible, but it's not...
Well, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, but it's a different Bible than the Bible that you have, in the sense
that... Well, we use your Bible, too.
Yeah, but you focus on the New Testament and we focus on the Old Testament. We're not interested in the New Testament.
You don't use the New Testament at all.
That's true. We don't.
And see what I'm saying? So we have twice the available information.
Well, I mean, it could be argued that I have the book that's the foundation of everything that has come since then, the book that tells the fundamental truth, and you have some offshoot, something that came later that doesn't have the depth and the... doesn't resonate the same
way.
Well,
Mr. Franks, why don't you go find someone to argue that with and then come back to me and we'll continue this conversation and I will wait on the phone line for you to get done with that futile exercise. Okay, I'll wait here.
You seem rather impatient and...
You seem rather impatient.
Well, you seem hostile.
Well, you seem hostile.
I'm just listening to you. I'm listening to what you're saying to me,
Can I quote a good friend of mine?
Sure.
His name was Rodney King. He was severely beaten by four white policemen on a routine traffic stop. When he was beaten, the world broke out in riots. They were righteously indignant. He said to everyone, "Can't we all just get along?" That's something that I think about every day. Every day. Now I say to you, Mr. Frank, can you and I just get along?
When do you know that he's present, and when do you know that he's absent, even though he is present?
He is always present, yet sometimes his absence results in a cold feeling of the soul. And that's when God has...
But he's still present.
He is always there.
He's always there.
Always.
But sometimes he leaves.
Isn't that a beautiful, mysterious, wonderful thing?
So he is there.
He is always. There is not a time when he is not there, when his presence is not around you.
But then he leaves.
But then he leaves sometimes.
But he's still there.
He goes off on his own to do something for him.
But he's still there.
But he is still there. You know, yesterday I was walking down the street, minding my own, when I saw a Canadian dollar. Do you know what a Canadian dollar is?
Well, I don't know exactly what it looks like,
but... It's not paper. It is a coin. And I almost walked past it thinking, well, I don't need any Canadian money. And then I thought to myself, well, maybe I don't need no Canadian money. But I know someone who does.
a Canadian.
Well, yes, that's what I was going to say.
Oh, I'm
sorry. Me.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
But I was pausing for effect, you know. I wasn't struggling to come up with the answer. I was making a dramatic effort.
I'm really sorry.
You do that to me often, Mr. Franks. I will pause for an effect, and you'll fill in the blank with whatever is in your mind. We're two different people, don't forget. So my mind does not work in the same machinations that your...
Could you hold on 1 second?
I can hold on for 1 second.
I'll be right back. Hello?
Joey?
Yes, Naomi.
How are you?
I'm fine.
There's a 3:30 of limbo at New Wilshire.
Okay, you want to meet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so a little before that?
You got it.
Ruby. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Once upon a time, there was a child who, in the course of one day, grew extremely old. He passed through puberty, young adulthood, full virile maturity, middle age, the graying and loss of his hair, the development of a slight palsy in his left hand, until, less than 12 hours later, rheumy-eyed, teeth having rotted away, hardly able to stand any longer, and leaning for support on a broken fence post, he found himself at the very threshold of death. Now, at that time, there lived a maiden so beautiful that just to see her was to purify yourself. She usually wore jeans, a pair of sandals, and heart-shaped sunglasses, and she liked to chew a straw as though a country girl. And when the child-turned-dying old man came to her, she unbuttoned her blouse and offered her breast to him. And so, he began to suck. Now, a unicorn is a white horse with a great corkscrew horn coming out of its forehead. And they say the touch of this horn can purify water, cure the sick, restore virginity, undo a lie, call back the note of the bell that is already rung, and help diabetics by distracting them. And this very day, a unicorn was standing at the edge of a dark pool of water. It lifted its leg and urinated against a tree. Then it began rooting with its horn at the edge of a blueberry bush when it saw the old man sucking at the breast of the maiden. And what was extraordinary was that the old man was getting younger while the maiden was getting older. He seemed to be restoring his own youth by draining the maiden of hers. Now, at that very moment, a hippopotamus was resting at the bottom of the lake, with only his eyes protruding above the surface of the water, taking the whole thing in. He was very tired, very fatigued from having overeaten the papyrus and lily pads along the shore. And so he yawned, his mouth opening and revealing great yellowed stumps of teeth. And as his mouth opened wider and wider, the sun shone more brightly, and the sky became a lush menagerie of birds and butterflies, with clouds passing overhead, beautifully framed by the light of the sun. But then, when the hippopotamus closed its jaws, the day became colder and darker, as though a lid had been placed over the entire tableau, blocking light and warmth. And the unicorn could no longer see the couple, and so he went off about his business. And the maiden could no longer see the old man and became frightened at this thing sucking at her breast, and she threw it off. And so, ultimately, the maiden ended up at the emergency room of a local hospital with an infected breast, and the old man died on the road. And the unicorn, well, we actually have no idea what happened to him, but I'm sure he's fine wherever he is, and well, let's not worry about him.
You mean while he was taking these women physically and having a sexual intercourse with them, he was also preaching the word of God?
That's right.
Well, you know that sounds preposterous. I mean, how...
No, it doesn't. I don't know that sounds preposterous because it doesn't sound preposterous. I was there. Okay, Mr. Frank,
well,
that was there.
Well, maybe you can describe what happened.
Quite simply, he would pick me up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is before I had my own ministry, you know, and he would give me $5 to hold his pants,
mm-hmm.
okay? And, you know, I wanted to look at him do what he did because I was so enamored of the man and his work. And so he gave me this golden opportunity to see him preach and to earn an extra $5, which was under the table. That was not taxed.
But what about, I mean, it's one thing to take a woman who is a fallen woman and to preach to her and to talk about God and talk about salvation and talk about changing her life. It's another thing to actually have sex with her while you're preaching to her.
Well,
it just sounds like a contradiction.
Because that's the way you have a limited frame of experience, Mr. Frank.
So you were standing there holding his pants
mm-hmm.
while he was... Were you watching this event take place? Was your back turned? Or?
My back would be turned, you know, out of respect and reverence
mm-hmm.
for the man was doing his work. Have you heard of ORT? O-R-T.
I have heard of it. What does it stand for again?
It's a gang of Jewish women who are feminists and go against everything Christ values.
See, are you saying that this organization had set up these...
From Israel, yes.
From Israel.
They infiltrated Louisiana, and some of these B'nai B'rit women that you talk about,
mm-hmm.
they were part of it.
So these were Israeli women?
Israeli army women who undercover went as prostitutes to try to bring Mr. Swagger down.
Well, if that's true, then how come Mr. Swagger lost his...
Because it was part of God's plan. This is what I was trying to tell you before.
I remember that similar to the Jimmy Swagger, Jim Baker also had an involvement with a woman, not his wife. In this case, it was Jessica Hahn, who later appeared in Playboy magazine.
All sanctioned by Tammy Faye.
You mean she encouraged Jim Baker to have an affair with Jessica Hahn?
She was often in the room. Tammy Faye Baker was the one who encouraged Jessica Hahn to get breast implants. She even paid for it.
Joel?
Hey, Karen.
Hey.
I'm fine. How are you?
Fine.
Good.
there's new stuff in my life, but yeah, I'm fine.
What do you mean?
Well, my relationship with the guy in England has been over for the last 2 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's part of life. I think it's better like that, ultimately. But it's been kind of, painful, but I'm doing great.
I'm on the other line. Can I call you back?
Sure. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Well, at one point, my father berates me for being having been a bad husband to my wife, who's left me.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you came home late every night. You're too late for anything but dinner. You were a bad husband, and you, everything was about being a winner. But, you know, but you lost your wife because, Nathan, if you don't change your way, you're going to lose everything. My son, the winner, will lose everything. And then I have this very intense, dramatic speech. I say, listen to my father. My father, the head shaker in my audience, because earlier I accused him of nodding and then certain... listen to his sudden contempt for winning. Well, who made me that way? Who made me forget about everything except winning? Who is the father I was never good enough for? Before, I wasn't good enough for my wife. An A minus, Nathan, that's not good enough. You got to get an A plus. You got to study harder. Not one word of praise did I ever hear from you. Not one. I had to wait till I was 56 years old to hear that you read about me in the newspaper from Jimmy Breslin, that you flew down to Washington to watch me argue before the Supreme Court. Too driven, too ambitious to keep my wife out of the arms of another man? Who made me that way? And so I'm rolling along with this speech. I'm at this incredible peak of energy, especially when I go, not one word of praise did I hear from you. Not one. And I'm screaming. I'm 2 feet from the audience. You know, I'm a closer lid to the theater. And I really love when I turn away and I say, I had to wait till I was 56 years old. And that's very real because I'm 56 years old. I chose that age for the characters. I had to wait till I was 56 years old to hear that you read about me from Jimmy Breslin, that you went down to Washington and I'm to watch me argue before the Supreme Court, and I'm teary. And I'm at this point where I realize that I have the potential here to do great acting, and suddenly I drift away into this fantasy of this beautiful old white Porsche, this 56 Porsche Speedster with a little mesh in front of the lights, you know, in front of the front lights, little tiny side windows, with this beautiful fur, kind of fur seats. And the Porsche is parked in front of one of these Malibu apartments, you know, out on Pacific Coast Highway. And the door of the apartment is open, and you can look through the living room right out to the ocean, right over the deck. And I flash on this beautiful scene at Malibu, and I think, I must do this acting great, because if I do it great, then I will get this Porsche in Malibu. Someone will understand that I'm great and give me a movie or a series or something. And it flashes, and then I finish the speech, and suddenly everything changes and it goes dark, and I have this terrible thought that nobody cares about what I'm doing. Nobody cares that it might have been great, great acting. They're looking at me and thinking, what a chubby little silly guy this is. And suddenly I think, it doesn't matter whether I'm great or not great, that there's no way I'll ever have my Porsche at the beach.
There was once a woman who lived in a beautiful little stone house on the side of a hill. Her name was Isabella, and she had two small children, Irina and Papa Dom. Isabella's husband, Alphonse, was a religious missionary who'd gone to a city in central India known for its alcoholism, drug addiction, thievery, idolatry, sodomy, and atheism. And Alphonse immediately succumbed to every vice there. He became the lowest, most squalid, most corrupt of all the people of that town. But he wrote his wife letters full of lies, describing his many successes, how, where there once had been brothels and slave markets and opium dens, now, through his intercession, there were great cathedrals dedicated to the glory of God. He also described huge religious rallies and how hundreds of thousands of people would gather in the city square while he, Alphonse, on a platform, would speak to the multitudes of the glory of God, of life everlasting. And he wrote about how he had transformed this city of sin into a great religious center, and that, like a shining metropolis on a hill, it had become a beacon for all the other communities in the country. But as each one of his letters arrived and Isabella read them, their children's immune systems broke down. First, they developed sores on their skin and allergies to the food they ate. Then their eyes turned rheumy and yellow, and they began to collect fluid in their lungs. They both got nervous tics and began to waste away, their arms as thin as toothpicks. Isabella called on the local physician, Dr. Marvin Weinberg, an old man who had a small practice in town. Dr. Weinberg prescribed a number of medications, but the children continued to decline. Isabella wrote to her husband, pleading with him to return. But having become a drunkard and a drug addict, and immersed in the most vile filth and unable to extricate himself for fear of his life because he'd borrowed huge sums of money to start up yet another failing business and was too involved with the local crime lords to leave with ease, Alphonse could not return to Isabella. Besides, he knew that in one moment with him, she would realize that everything he had told her had been lies. So he wrote back to tell her there was a political crisis within the church. The archdeacon had recently died, and the matter of succession was highly contested. And there was a synod of bishops he had invoked, and they were all arriving in the next few days, and his presence was required, for if he were not there, the political situation could deteriorate, and the city might revert back to the condition in which he'd originally found it. And he could not, after all this time, bear to see that happen. And he told her he had utter confidence in Dr. Weinberg, who had helped him years ago when his left arm had been paralyzed. And he urged her to continue to rely on Dr. Weinberg and not to give up hope. And the two children, Irina and Papa Dom, passed away on that very same night.
I was a rambunctious, rebellious devil child. And there was one point where I was actually exorcised by a voodoo man. Then I began to see the error of my ways and that the devil had stuck his hand in my back and used me as a puppet, which is one of his methods. He actually wraps his hand around your spine and uses it to manipulate you.
Did you have a religious epiphany?
Did I have... is that a sexual question?
Well, no, what I meant by that question was, did you have a transformative experience when you realized that you wanted to turn to God?
I see what you're saying. Yes, I did.
How did that happen?
Well, I was on a long journey, a spiritual journey, while I was on a Circle Line tour of Manhattan, New York.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on a journey physically, but it was a circle.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to weep. I'm not a proud man, but I started crying like a little girl. Now keep in mind, I'm 14 years old. And you know what it's like to be 14 and to cry in public.
It's a shameful thing.
It's a shameful, shameful thing. And the more I cried, the more I could not stop crying. And the more I could not stop crying, the more I cried.
And then what happened? Did God enter your life at that point?
That's when I met God face to face.
Did you actually see the face of God? Or?
I saw the face of God.
And what did God look like?
He was a custodian on the boat.
What was he wearing?
Like an olive drab, one-piece, overall type uniform.
And then, would he have a mop or?
He had a Sennheiser 350 broom, which is one. Sennheiser is a broom manufacturer, and one of the best. And he had a 350, which back then was state of the art. Now, you know, clearly there's better broom technology in the last 30 years, but. At the time, it was one of the top brooms available.
And did he say anything to you, or did you say anything to him?
He looked at me. He said stuff to me, but in a mind, you know, transferring mind messages. I understood. He just looked at me because he saw me crying, but it was really God, and that's what I came to understand. That was God looking at me, taking that form like an angel, and transferring his love and understanding and compassion to me, and I swore, I broke down and swore that I would serve him forever and ever. Nothing would sway my faith.
When I was in the Army in late 60s, they had at the Frankfurt Zoo in Germany a quarry of baboons. And this, it turns out, was a very rare phenomena, because baboons in captivity are violent and terrible creatures. And in most cases in history where a group of 20 or 30 baboons was kept together, all of the females would be killed immediately. And Frankfurt had one of the last baboon quarries. And you could go to this quarry in Frankfurt in the late 60s, this exhibit at the Frankfurt Zoo, and you'd see blood all over the place. And you'd see these violent encounters between the baboons. There was a lot of mating, because the women, the female baboons, were in such fear of being killed by the males that they were constantly presenting themselves to any male around them. And I don't know if you've ever seen a baboon presenting, or they back up, you know, it's a terrible thing. And like I said, there are no, you probably can't find a baboon quarry in existence now. The Germans were the last to find that interesting. You know, so who gives a fuck about these baboons? I mean, or these primitive cultures, this tribal culture eating their grubs and pigs and smoking their weeds and having these bizarre belief systems about where the universe came from. And
well, that's the way it is, the way it goes, the way of all flesh. It's the answer and the question, the punchline and the payoff. It's the doorway to the stairway, to the right way, to the wrong way. It takes you there and takes you back. It's home in a foreign land.
Lord, if I'd have listened to what my dear old mother said, dead and gone. Oh, oh, she's dead and gone. Ooh, what I'm gonna do now?
A candy store, a five and dime, or a place that has candy in barrels, like old-fashioned barrels of candy. And it'll be like an old country store. There's one up by me, has barrels of candy, wooden barrels. Now, occasionally, I will steal some candy, penny candy, you know, nothing major. And I think to myself, I've got to stop doing this. This is a sin. It's one of the Ten Commandments. And then I realize this is all part of God's plan. And I just am filled with so much joy. And I'm so excited that God has done this. He's a miracle. Mr. Franks, God is a miracle. He is love. He is upside down. He's in and out. He's everywhere. He's on a roller coaster that does not exist. You see what I'm saying?
Well, let me ask you, if that's part of God's plan, what about when someone is robbed or someone is murdered by somebody else? Or, you know, what about more major kinds of crimes? Are those also part of God's plan? I mean, if everything is part of God's plan, then can you really say that anything is evil since it emanates
from
God?
I can answer that in a bit of a trick, a bit of a game.
Mm-hmm.
Would you spell evil for me?
E-V-I-L.
Now mix it up and go backwards.
V-I-L-E. Vile.
Now go backwards from the other one.
Live. Live.
That's right. That's right.
Hmm.
You have to have evil to live.
Well, let me ask you another question. If religious people really believe in an afterlife and they believe that we all go off to our reward, then why do they grieve so much when people die? It just is incomprehensible to me, because if you really believe that this person is going on to their ultimate reward and they're going off to heaven and they're going to, if it's going to be wonderful for them, then why in the world would you grieve at a time like that? Why not celebrate?
I agree with you. When somebody grieves, it's a selfishness. There should be a party, a celebration. There should be dancing in the streets, but there's always a wailing and a misery that shouldn't be there, should not be happening.
How do you think you would feel if you were really confronted with the imminence of your own death? Would you be saying...
Every day I'm confronted with the imminence of death.
But I mean your own.
What if I get up right now, get off the phone, and then... you know, get hit by a bus, or a meteor lands and strikes me dead, or lightning happens, or I get hit in the head by an errant golf ball, or some such nonsense. I mean, that could happen too.
So you're afraid you're going to be hit by an errant golf ball?
All the time, unless I'm in the city streets. But yes, who knows?
But what I'm asking...
I walk down the street, I don't know what's in front of me, what's going to happen to me.
But
there's crazy, crazy people and things out there, Mr. Franks. You know that.
Let me suggest another scenario for you. Imagine you're in a hospital room and you are dying of a degenerative disease, and you're on the last, you're going to die in the next few hours, perhaps, and you know that. Would you simply be calm and peaceful about it, or would you be afraid of what your fate might be, whether in fact you will go off to heaven, or whether you will be extinguished, you know, forever?
Well, let me answer this way, because I know. I have your answer every day. I have your answer. I cannot wait. I eat fried foods. I eat fatty foods. I smoke. I can't wait to die. I can't do it by my own hands. Or it doesn't count. But I cannot wait. I do things every day that I hope will hurry up and persuade my death to come quicker. want to get to heaven.
What if there is no heaven? What if you're deluded? What if there's nothing?
Well, any more talk like that, Mr. Frankson, I'll end this phone call right now. Do you understand me? I will hang up.
But everybody wonders and worries. I mean, most people wonder and worry about these questions. Even people who
I don't.
Well, just
so there. I don't hang out in your group. I don't sit around with people drinking fancy wine, you know, sitting there going, well, I wonder what about this? Or I wonder what about this? Well, okay, that sounds good. I mean, that's a waste of time.
Because you know the answer.
That's right.
But what if you didn't know the answer? I mean, is it possible?
Well, what if you're really 800 years old and you're a piece of stone?
What?
Exactly.